Welcome to the ASVAB Domination Podcast, where we help you crush the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, also known as the ASVAB, in order to achieve your dreams of serving in the United States Armed Forces. I'm your host, Mickey Gaminol, and I'm excited to share my years of experience and expertise in ASVAB preparation with you. In each episode, we'll dive deep into test material, strategies for success, and insights from military veterans and experts. Whether you're a high school student considering military service or a seasoned professional seeking to advance your career, this podcast is your ultimate guide to mastering the ASVAB and achieving your goals. Let's dominate the ASVAB together.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the ASVAB Domination Show. I am your host, Mickey Gaminol, and today I am very, very excited. I have Sergeant First Class Schwartz in the building, or in his building. He's over there in New York. He is the Recruiting and Retention Command for Alpha Company for the New York Army National Guard. So very excited to have you back, Schwartz. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really pumped up for this.
Awesome. Yeah, so for those that don't know, one of my very first ever YouTube videos was this guy right here, SFC Schwartz, and he put me on to how the social media game works, like how to do polls and Instagram. I'm still not as great at social media or as consistent as I would like to be, but you set the standard, sir. I really appreciate what you do. So thank you so much.
I do my best.
Heck yeah. So, and he does YouTube lives, and we'll get into all that at the end. We'll figure out where they can contact you and stuff like that. But before we get started, how's business? How's recruiting going? How's it been?
Recruiting's going great this year. It's great. Yeah, YouTube helps me out a lot.
I bet. What do you go over in your YouTube lives? Like what is your main focus in those?
So when I first joined the military or the National Guard, information was not very available like it is today. And recruiting was way different back then. So I decided to become a YouTuber more seriously back in 2020. So my mission, my goal is to help people make a well-informed decision, because I wish that more recruiters would just be able to share the information and allow them to make a decision for themselves and not use persuasion, coercion, or you know, strong arm them to feel like they have to sign up and pressure them. So during my live streams, I address commonly asked questions and concerns for those who wish to get like an upfront, straightforward, you know, no fluff responses, because I have no skin in the game. I'm not your recruiter. I'm going to tell you what it's like. I have over 19 years of experience as a recruiter. This July will be 20 years as a recruiter.
Awesome.
So I've been doing this for a very, very long time, and I love what I do. And doing it on YouTube helps me give back at a much greater scale.
Absolutely. How long have you been doing the YouTube channel stuff or the YouTube videos?
So I actually started in 2012 simultaneously with Instagram and YouTube. Long story short, I took a program or a course called Instagram Impact Academy. I decided that ignorantly that Instagram was where it was going to be at. And I did like maybe 10 or 11 videos on my original channel, and I let it go and didn't focus on it at all. And then when I did some like audits on like where my people were coming from, and it turned out that it was coming from my YouTube channel. And I say, if you have any questions, DM me on Instagram at Team Swartz, and it would reach out to me there. When I did that, the light bulb went off, and I was like, man, I should really figure out how to use YouTube. And with YouTube being the second largest search engine next to Google, which are both owned by Google, I leveraged search engine optimization, or SEO for short. And I just created videos under the, you know, topics of questions and concerns that potential applicants would ask in Google or YouTube search. And that's how I titled my videos, and that's how I grew it. So to answer your question more directly, 2020, August 1st is when I decided to double down my efforts and take YouTube seriously. And since then, I went from just under 2,000 subscribers to, I think, 57, almost 58,000 now.
Wow. Amazing. That's great.
If it was more fans. Entertainment based, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's a ton of fans. That's awesome.
Yeah, they're pretty loyal too, which is great.
So great. Well, cool. That's really great. I think I think we forget that YouTube's actually used as a search engine. So it's awesome that you're utilizing it and answering the questions that the people are asking. You know, it's funny, I'm trying to do SEO on my end, and really it's more about what are people asking, right? So it's just becoming better at what you're trying to get across, what you're trying to send out. So I think that's awesome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So as an experienced National Guard recruiter, what advice would you offer to our listeners who are preparing to take the ASVAB exam? Because that's my show, right? So specifically on the ASVAB, how can they maximize their scores and opportunities within the Guard?
So my recommendation is that you don't practice before seeing a recruiter, because taking their practice test is going to give them a good indicator where they're at now, and understand that if they effectively and consistently study for an hour to 2 hours a day, they'll increase their scores on average by 8 to 10 points realistically. And, you know, it's about strategy as well. So like, as a recruiter, I always brief this, that when they're about to take the ASVAB test, I always tell them, listen, when I grew up, they always told me, when in doubt, choose C. So in this case, 3, because we use 1, 2, 3, and 4 as our multiple choice options. 3 does score the highest on the practice test, which proves to me that that must be true. And then the other tip is, when the time is running out, you got like 15 seconds left, and if you have any questions that are left over, what I recommend is that you just go 3, 3, 3, 3, 3 for the remaining questions that you know you're not going to be able to get to, because every question that you don't get to and you don't attempt anything is going to be marked wrong. So you might as well have a 25% chance of getting it right versus a 100% chance of it being marked wrong by not even trying.
Perfect.
And then thirdly, for the paragraph comprehension, the last tip I always give them before going in there is, read the question first before you read the paragraph. That way, when you're reading a paragraph, you find the answer right there in the first 2 or 3 sentences, and you stop reading, because the rest does not matter. Then you choose the appropriate multiple choice answer and you move on. And that's pretty much my briefing before they take the ASVAB test. But the areas of emphasis that I want them to focus in on is math and arithmetic. In my opinion, like, you're the educator, I'm not. But from a recruiter's perspective, I always tell them, listen, unless you're going to memorize every word in the dictionary, there's no way you're going to be able to do that. So just option 3, if you don't know it and you can make an educated guess. As you know, prefixes and suffixes are not too common on the ASVAB, so it's either you know it or you don't, most cases. But as far as paragraph comprehension, if you follow that strategy, it's going to improve your chances of getting to the correct answer. And math and arithmetic is something kind of like a bicycle. If you were okay or good with it in high school, it's like riding a bike. Once you get back into studying, remembering the steps, the formulas, and the basic multiplication table, which helps in every aspect, then you have a greater chance of passing the test. And with the Army's new 09 mic program, is super phenomenal.
Tell us more about the 09 mic. From what I understand, it is an ASVAB preparation for potential recruits, and they also do body composition as well. Is that correct?
Correct. There are 2 parts, and previously you could choose one or the other. You couldn't have both. Now you can have both. So you could be overweight and look to improve your ASVAB score. So with the 09 mic program, with the AFQ or the ASVAB portion, as long as you score between a 21 and a 30, what you could do is go there. They'll pay you up to 90 days. They will teach you the ASVAB, and you'll take the, you're familiar with this, the BSEP exam, or the BSEP course, basically. And after 3 weeks, you'll retake the ASVAB. And as long as you pass, then you'll move on and be presented the options from there. For the body fat composition, currently, as long as you're not more than 6% over your maximum allowable body fat per your age and gender, then you can go to this program. They'll help you lose the weight within 90 days or less. And then again, just like the academic version, once you complete that program or get within 2% body fat over your maximum, that's the minimum allowable body fat percentage to move on to your basic training and all that good stuff. Now, very, very soon, they're going to be increasing that to 8% body fat. So that's going to be huge for a lot of people. That's going to be a game changer and open up the doors for a wider clientele.
Wider clientele. I like what you did there.
Oh, no pun intended. Didn't even realize that.
Awesome. No, that's great.
It's but they have over a 98% graduation rate. So if you are offered that program, don't think that, you know, don't sleep on it. It's a great, great option. And you're literally getting paid to work out and learn and then actually have a better opportunity. And I just want to throw this in there before we move on from the Zero Nine Mike program. Is the Zero Nine Mike program good or not? My opinion is yes. You could try to get a 31 and maybe have lower scores impacting the opportunities and job skills that could be offered to you. Or you can, you know, for lack of a better phrase, suck it up, go there and go through the training and, you know, check your ego at the door, because they're going to teach you about the ASVAB, increase your line scores and all that stuff. And in the end, you're going to have greater line scores to qualify for more opportunities and more jobs versus the other way around. So it's a win-win. So you might have to settle for something a little less exciting at first, but by the end of your contract, then you can reclass or renegotiate changing your job and or your unit and move on from there.
Awesome.
And that's the advantage.
Solid advice. So that kind of leads into the next question, right? Because I personally, when I started doing ASVAB stuff, I had a lot of people reach out to me saying, hey, ASVAB's a classification test. You shouldn't be teaching people how to game this test, because you're going to have a lot of people in jobs that they don't deserve or that sort of thing. Now, I can tell just by the way that you mentioned Zero Nine Mike and how you should use those resources that are offered to you, that you're not of the same mindset. Your mentality is more take what you can get, do your best, and every advantage you can get is how people get ahead, which is I think a much more positive growth mindset. But absolutely. Given that, what would you say is the main priority? Like if your ASVAB score increases, like if we were to say the difference between like a 31 and a 76. Now I know the difference between 31 and 76, right? I've done the subtraction, but what would you say is the difference when it comes to actually getting your contract and getting those bonuses, picking your MOS, you know, is there a substantial difference or not?
There's a substantial difference in the overall AFQT score, meaning that overall score that people are always focused on. Like in this case, if they're failing the ASVAB and they're looking just to get their foot in the door, there is a major difference between scoring a 21 to a 30 versus completing the program and scoring potentially most of my applicants, if not all of them, have all scored over 20 points higher going through the Zero Nine Mike program. And each and every single one of them have either met the same line scores or have increased their line scores by 5+ points, which is extremely beneficial to them. Now, the only downside to the Zero Nine Mike program for the academic version in of itself is, or unlike the body fat composition, you're locking yourself in for a specific MOS. You're taking a risk, slight risk, by going through the Zero Nine Mike program for the academic version, because it's basically an open contract, meaning that until you complete that program and they see your scores that after they've increased, what you're offered at that point with your new scores. And it's based on the needs of the Army and what they're going to offer you. And they typically give you 1 to 5 minutes to look through the list and decide from there. So it would be in your best interest to have that conversation with your recruiter. I know I sit down with my soldiers and I say, listen, as of right now, line scores typically don't drop. They'll go up or remain the same, because that's skills. Now, when you get there, these are the MOSs currently you pre-qualify for. And I teach them how to research them through YouTube videos, the official website for GoArmy.com and the NationalGuard.com, so they can get a good visual of each MOS that they're slightly interested in, and hope and pray that they get one of those. And that's kind of going back to why I said you might have to choose something a little less exciting for your initial contract just to get your foot in the door, because later on when you go to retake the ASVAB as an in-service or prior service applicant or currently serving member, when you retake the ASVAB, you don't have to worry about that AFQT requirement. You can literally bomb the test and only worry about your line scores to qualify for the MOS or opportunity you're trying to go for.
Awesome. I love it. I mean, You're such a, I can tell you're such a great recruiter just by the way you talk about these things. When I was recruited, I ended up, I mean, it was hard, right? Because I'm an older guy. So it was a big stack of paperwork for my ACL. It was 10 years of employment history, address changes. What was I doing in Peace Corps Morocco? Like, was there any da da da? Like, it was just so much stuff. And my recruiter at the time was a specialist, and she was great. You know, she wanted to help me as much as she could, but she didn't have the tenure, right? Like, knowing all of these tips and tricks of the trade is huge. You know, when I got in, I was really upset because I thought I'd have a full student loan repayment program and it would go up to 100%. And then when I was signing the contract, I found out, well, it's 15% per year for 6 years, which only adds up to 90%. And of course, I was devastated, right? Because while 10% is only, you know, whatever 10% is of my student loans, it's not as much as the 90. It's still these expectations, right? They say expectations are the root of all suffering. And so getting that for that knowledge up front that you give your recruits about the 09 MIC program, about where their line scores are at, about what job they want, that's going to save them so much headache, you know? And when they're saying, hey, I should get this, they can say that with a little bit of validation, with a little bit of vindiction, like, this is what I get. And so I think it's great. I think it's great that you're doing that all across the board.
Thank you. I was that ignorant recruiter that was misrepresenting the student loan repayment program. So unpopular fact is, in my first 10 years of recruiting, I was like, yeah, you're going to get up to $50,000. And I'm thinking like they're monthly installments, like you thought probably. Mm-hmm. And recruiters don't know what they don't know. And they probably don't ask. And I didn't until an education office representative came to our battalion conference and broke it down. And I looked at it and I was like, that's actually horrible. It's not as lucrative as it sounds like we're portraying it. So now when I sit down with my applicants or anybody who's asking on my channel, I always tell them, listen, I'm going to keep it 100 with you. And I tell them it's an annual payment a year after you start your contract. You got to be in once qualified. It's up to 15% or up to $7,500 per year. Any other installment for the other 11 months that's expected of you, you have to provide to the
lender
to, you know, pay, you know, keep your stuff current. Mm-hmm. So it does pay up to $50,000 for an 8-year contract or up to 45 for a 6. But as you know, it's not as helpful as it could be. And in fact, I did a workshop with National Guard Bureau and in Washington, D.C., when we were looking at ways to improve retention and recruiting efforts. And I say, listen, you got to switch up the student loan repayment program. Instead of doing one annual payment, figure it out so you can do a monthly installment, because that's going to really help out the potential applicant or soldier versus the way the thing is currently right now.
Right. Well, it's great. I mean, it's great that the Army has people like you who are in a position to make those sorts of recommendations. You know, that especially the National Guard. I'm working full time as a credentialing assistant. I do some credentialing assistance on the side. And what I've come to realize, specifically in National Guard and reservists, is it's really hard to notify soldiers of their benefits after they get in. Right? They hear about all these benefits up front from their recruiter. They think they're going to, you know, be handed the golden keys as soon as they get through with AIT and basic training. And then they go to drill and it's all like sharp training, EO training, PHA, like it's very focused on like administrative tasks. It's not so much focused. And they try to, right? Like I know as a lieutenant, I see, you know, soldier care is our priority. We need to look out for these soldiers. But there's just so much benefits out there that it's really hard to get all that information out at a drill. So I think it's great that you're doing that. And I think it's great that you're in a position to let them know as well.
I appreciate that. And that's actually the other role of us being recruiters in the National Guard. As part of our job, we also have a retention piece. So recruiters in the Guard, we have a dual mission, but recruiting is the primary thing. Mm-hmm. So to help out the units, what I would suggest is reach out to your recruiter and say, hey, listen, for 30 to 60 minutes, can you come in and brief my soldiers on the education benefits and whatever else you want to bring up that may be useful for our soldiers? And like you said, you join, you're told the benefits at that point, usually goes through one year, not the other. You come back from training and maybe your recruiter is not available. Your unit's like ignorant. They don't really know. I've actually had infantry units in my local area who were prior service from another branch of service who didn't know our benefits, tell their soldiers, because, you know, infantry, they're very egocentric. Like, don't dare go to the AGR full-time staff. You got to go through me.
Right.
Chain of command made that first. Mistake of going. Exactly. So they got it stopped at the squad leader or the platoon sergeant, and they said, oh, you don't have any state benefits. What's that? No, you don't have that. And then the soldier literally pays out of pocket for their education when they join to get it paid. And then, like, when I finally tell them, they're like really, really irate that they paid out thousands of dollars for education that they could have paid had the unit been knowledgeable of our benefits. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely reach out to your recruiters, give some classes to the units for sure.
Right. And it's tough. Those squad leaders think they're doing their jobs, right? They think, okay, I squashed the problem, you know, and it's just not the case. It's a shame. So it's a lot of misinformation out there. Definitely do your research. Tune in to Team Swartz. I mean, they got it all for you. Cool. So I'm going to ask you a couple other questions. What was your MOS? What was your original AIT and all that?
So I've been in for a minute. I'm a dinosaur. It's 23 years next or in 4 days. And awesome. I originally enlisted as a 71 Lima, which is now equivalent to a 42 Alpha Human Resources Specialist. Back then it was administrative assistant. I failed my color test, so I could not go in my field artillery company as a 13 Foxtrot Pfister. So I said, all right, so what are my options? And they're all administrative. I said, which one's got the shortest training time? And I'll take that, because I was like pretty bummed out. But that's what I enlisted as. A couple years later, I reclassed as a 21 Foxtrot crane operator with the engineers, which is now in the 12 series. But due to my rank being a sergeant first class, they switched it to 12 November, general construction equipment operator. But shortly after that, I decided that, you know what? I like helping people. That's why I joined the Guard. And why not become a recruiter and share the gospel of the National Guard and what I feel helped me be successful. Like, I'm from a small town, and technically it's downstate New York, but here in New York City, we're like, oh, that's upstate. But it got me out of my small town and out of my comfort zone, and it exposed me to an urban environment with all the things that come along with that. And it forced me to grow out of my shell, because not technically, but I'm primarily introverted, you know, despite how I am in my videos and whatnot. And with recruiting, if you don't talk, you're not going to make mission. So yeah, I had to learn real quick when I can turn it on, turn it off, and all that good stuff. But I love what I do. So my third MOS is 79 Tango, Recruiting and Retention NCO. I also happen to be drill sergeant qualified. I completed the Drill Sergeant Academy in summer of 2020. I think July 18th was my graduation date.
Awesome. Yeah, that was right before our original interview. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Dang. Okay, cool. So you have extensive knowledge. You've been through a lot of MOSs. And are you colorblind then? I'm colorblind myself.
Yeah, I'm red-green colorblind specifically.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Well, and so, yeah, this is an exact example, right, where I would tell people, oh, I'm colorblind, joining the military. And even at basic training, they're like, you can't join, you know? So the misinformation is just so fast, you know? Yep.
You're limited, but you still have options.
Mm-hmm. 100%. All right. Awesome. And apparently more than one. If you've got three MOSs, you can
that's one of the perks of being part-time. You have more flexibility.
True. 100%. No, that's a good deal. Cool. So let me ask you some other questions. I got a little list here of different things. So can you, since you've been to three different AITs, would you share any stories from either basic training or AIT, any stories of what you've experienced from those different schools?
Nothing that really stands out. I just realized at the time, like, I went through basic training at Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Okay.
And I thought the discipline was pretty high there, and it was. But PT, I meant to say PT, I thought was like, you know, pretty high speed there and pretty vigorous. So those of you who decide to go to Fort Jackson for anything, whether it's basic training or AIT, in my experience, when I went through, the discipline definitely lacked at Fort Jackson, but the PT definitely pushed the envelope for growth and excelling in all the events of the PT test at that time. But as far as like anything else that stands out for AIT, I don't know. I love being in a training environment.
You like TRADOC?
Honestly. Yeah, I do. I love TRADOC.
That's awesome. I love TradeHawk too. I think it has its place. I think it's definitely underrated. It's a lot easier, just like, you know, it's a lot easier to kind of neg things, right? You sound cool when you're a cynic, 9 times out of 10. So I think TradeHawk is underappreciated. I think you're right on that. Yeah. So where are you sending most of the recruits I've seen are going to Jackson? Is that still true, or are they going? I mean, I guess they go all over, but where are most of your people going?
It varies, honestly. It could be either four of them. It could be Fort Moore in Georgia, Fort Sill, Oklahoma, Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and Fort Leonard Wood in Missouri.
Okay.
If they're going for like a combat job, like 11 Bravo, infantry, military police, field artillery, Cav Scout, so on and so forth, those are all going to be done at OSUT, one station unit training between Fort Sill, Fort Leonard Wood, and Fort Moore. But if you're going into a combat support role, like me as a human resources, right? Or mechanic, logistics, communication, so on and so forth, your basic training experience can be anywhere, and you'll just end up at your AIT site for the respective MOS that you're joining for. And that can be anywhere in the US. Gotcha. But basic will always be in one of those four locations.
Awesome. Yeah, I was in Fort Leonard Wood. I felt like it was pretty good. It was cold, though. It was definitely cold. And then OCS, of course, is always going to be Fort Jackson. So... yeah, or not Jackson. Where is it? Georgia.
Yeah, Fort Moore now, but it used to be Fort Benning.
That's right. That's why I couldn't figure out.
Well, if you did federal OCS.
Right. Do you get a lot of people going state OCS over in New York? Or is it?
I average maybe one a year that does OCS, sometimes two. Depends on the applicants that come in. And for those of you that are looking to join and you do end up being eligible and meeting the criteria for OCS, don't sleep on state OCS. It is a great viable option. In my opinion, I prefer the federal OCS because you're in TRADOC and you'll be done a lot faster. And again, this is just my opinion. In traditional state OCS, as you know, it's like a year and a half's worth of training part-time. You're expected to pass your Army Combat Fitness test every month and meet all the education credentials and stuff like that. And you can't miss any drills. So any emergencies, illnesses, injuries, that could all, you know, negatively impact and potentially kick you out of OCS. So there's a lot of room for an error or something to go wrong. But state OCS is really, really good because then you got like the whole month to prepare for the next 2 days or the next month for OCS, and you could excel academically, in my opinion. I don't know. I didn't go through OCS. You could verify. But if you're really, really interested in going full time and for whatever reason there's no funding or available seats for federal OCS, go state OCS. If you could prove yourself and you're really, really good on your Army Combat Fitness test and you're good with land navigation, they'll send you to the state accelerated OCS program, and that's 9 weeks, which is 3 weeks shorter than the federal OCS.
Gotcha. Good deal. So no, I've
still
seen.
Still go full time.
I saw those accelerated guys over at Benning, and nobody likes those guys because it's like they're getting done sooner. But yeah, no, I did federal, and I prefer federal, of course, because, you know, I went to OCS to be the best, as we say. But yeah, I think you're exactly right. You don't want to sleep on state. And you know, the beauty of what you're talking about, when you're talking about like spreading the news of National Guard, is there's no wrong choice, right? There's just the different choices of what you can do. And you can tell in the way that you're speaking that you truly believe it. You know, you're not just saying it to get your numbers or to reach a quota. You really believe that, like, getting in and getting there, you know, it obviously changed your life, and you know that you're in it to change lives as well, which is great. Cool. So are there any misconceptions or myths about the National Guard that you see a lot of as people are recruiting?
I actually dedicated a video titled debunked the myths of the National Guard, because you got a lot of ignorant active duty recruiters and other branches of the services that love to bash the National Guard because they don't know anything about us. They hate us because they ain't us, as they say in a movie, right?
True that, 100%.
But some of the myths that are out there and that you might hear from an active duty recruiter is, oh, National Guard is strictly state. They don't have any federal funding. Yeah, they offer state tuition, but they, you know, it's based on first come, first serve and funding. And you know, all kinds of different things. And the fact of the matter is, and to put it out there, the Army National Guard is both state and federal. So where do you think the funds come from for your drill weekends, your military education, your specialty schools, and so on and so forth? That's all federal money, right? That's you're earning federal points because that's coming from a federal pot of money. Now, each state, because we're state and federal, we have a separate pot of money for our state missions. And, you know, that funds like the state active duty when you're activated to, you know, respond to a natural disaster, state emergency. Let's say, you know, there's a civil unrest and we have to go and help the law enforcement with riot control or what have you, or any number of things that could happen within your community. Those state funds fund those things that reservists have nothing to do with. So we are literally in our communities, we serve locally, right? In the event that our state or country needs us overseas. And that is the myth that the guard is strictly state money and they run out. So the fact of the matter is I can only recall maybe once, maybe twice in history that I can recall where a state struggled to meet the funding for education for their state where they actually ran out of money for it. So the fact of the matter is the money is there. Yes, it is by regulation, by policy, first come, first serve, in the event that funding does run out. But in my experience, in my almost 20 years of experience, at least in my state, we have never ran out of state tuition funds to pay for your education. So I hate when recruiters sit there and downplay it. And they even like tell people, you're better off in the reserve because we have federal tuition that covers $4,000. I'm like, mother flower, we get the same federal funding as well. So we get $4,000 too. So what makes you better? Like,
yep.
All right, so what? Let's say we do run out of money, but most times we don't. Like, you're still making more through the state tuition and the federal with the guard versus just the $4,000 in reserve. Like, it boggles my mind how recruiters do it. But that's primarily why, like, even on my channel, I'm just pro Army. And like you were saying previously, you know, to each its own, like we're all great options based on your needs, wants, and desires. So when you're doing your research, just do your research and make a well-informed decision and verify on the official websites, talk to people like us, people that are currently serving, take that with a grain of salt though. Mm-hmm. And just because Johnny Snotnosem down the block tells you what you should or shouldn't do with your life, you know, you only have one life to live. So unless they're willing to pay your bills, put a roof over your head, food in your stomach, clothes in your back, hey, thank you for your opinion. Appreciate it. But at the end of the day, you got to choose for your reasons and your reasons alone, period.
100%. 100% agree with that. And I got to say, as far as funding goes, you know, I went to OCS. And at OCS, there was a holdover problem. It was right at the start of COVID. And during OCS, everybody federally funded was stuck in a holdover status while National Guard got front loaded because of our state benefits. Same thing happened in Bullock. In Bullock, I got a sweet rental car. I was driving around in a Kia Soul all throughout Bullock because my state funded it. And every reservist and every active duty was begging for rides, you know, because they had to take the bus. And so if it's funding you're afraid of with the National Guard, I think it's a mistake. I don't see that going sideways. And even on the credentialing assistance side, I reach out to National Guardsmen all day long because they have 4,000 left over. They have that credentialing assistance left over because they're going to school using their in-state tuition benefits. So they're doing exactly what Sergeant Schwartz is talking about, where they're double dipping, right? They're getting all of their four-year bachelor's degree paid for. Meanwhile, they're picking up 10 IT certifications on the side through online classes, all paid. And that part's federally funded while the state is funding their education for in-person. And it's just a sweet deal. It really is.
You know what's funny? I appreciate you saying that. That's an angle I wasn't even thinking. Simultaneously going to college while getting credentialing at the same time using two different pots of money. Mm-hmm. Reservists can't do that. Not even active duty.
No, not active duty. And they're working not 40 hours a week, right? They're working like 60 hours, you know, sometimes depending on chain of command, depending on deployments, depending on op tempo, it's a whole different game, right? And it's a whole different game for National Guard. Let's be real. Op tempo can pick up in National Guard too. It's not always just the weekends and the 2 weeks. But at the end of the day, if you're signing paperwork, you want as many pots of money as you can get. And I think National Guard really has it, in my opinion. I haven't seen anything else that comes close.
I was also unaware that active duty only get $4,000 for tuition. In my mind, I thought they got like a lot more than that because they're full time. No, it's the same as us, 4,000 per year. And that's it. I'm like, but obviously they have the post 9/11 that they could use once they get out. But yeah, that's a different story for another day. But
yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, there's pros and cons always, but I got to agree with you, and I'm in the National Guard myself. You know, I'm not recruiting. I do ASVAB preparation. If you're listening, you probably know that, but, I would always push for National Guard. I got a quick question for you. So if you had to pick a different branch of service, right? Army is off the table. Which branch of service would you go with and why?
Hands down, I have to go to the Marine Corps. They have the best dress uniform ever. Like, and their marketing with the Eagle, Globe, and Anchor, with the service to country or guide and country, like that just, I almost joined the Marine Corps when I first started my endeavors in researching and trying to join. Unfortunately, back in 2000 to 2001, when I was going through recruiters, it was very, very toxic at the time. And they were very high pressure, used car salesman like recruiters. And it really, really turned me off. And the only reason why I ended up in the Army, specifically the National Guard, is because the National Guard recruiter was more kind of like me, where they were like, hey, listen, hey, he was kind of like nonchalant, like, if you join, you join. If you don't, you don't. And here's all the information. And he let me make that decision for me. So I don't know if it was like a Jedi mind trick or whatever, but like he gave me the exact information to help me feel more comfortable with it. And he did not pressure me to do something I didn't. And ironically, I met him I spoke to him Monday night around 11:30 at night. And that was when we had dial up. So I was on the website, which is very limited at the time. For some reason, he picked up the phone. He said, come into my office the next day. So after school, I went there. By Friday, I was doing the medical and contract.
Nice. Wow. No, the Marines took an L. I mean, the fact that the Marines lost you could be doing all this recruiting stuff for Marines right now. But I don't think they have as much good news as the National Guard. So it's great.
They don't even like people on social media.
Right. That's true. They do have good marketing. I don't know if you remember Nava the Beast. Which one is it?
Yep. As a Marine or as like a service member being in the Marines, they would much rather you stay off of social media.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the Army is a little bit different, but I don't know. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but there used to be a YouTuber called Nava the Beast. He's kind of like the original gangsta of vlogging while being in the military and showing you like the behind the scenes, the day to day as a Marine. He's one of the reasons what inspired me to be on YouTube as well, along with Matt Ward from the Army Reserve at the time.
Yep.
But the Marine Corps, they don't want people to say stuff that doesn't make them look good because they're all about image.
Right. 100%. Yeah. No, I actually got my ASVAB start by tutoring Marine, a future Marine. And the good news is, you know, Marines, when they want to get into the Marines, they're pretty motivated. They'll go through, they'll study, they'll put in the hours 9 times out of 10. So that's a plus for the Marines.
100%. Loyalty to them is everything.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me ask you, as far as deployments go, how frequently do you think the National Guard deploys, or like, what's the regularity?
Depending on your MOS and the unit you're assigned to, if you're in a unit that regularly rotates, a unit may be up for deployment every 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
And depending on the unit, well, it also depends on the region, the country you're in, and how active your state is and things like that. There's a lot of different variables, but New York is very well funded and we're very active when it comes to deployment. So like our finance, like clockwork, every other year they're going on deployment, but not everyone has to go because we're at like 160% strength. We were like over 200% strength. So like,
wow, they ask you, congratulations. You want to
play or not? Yeah.
That's wild. I thought, so, go ahead. You go ahead. I got a question for you after this.
Okay. So yeah, so because they're so over strength, the unit's like, hey, listen, you want to go on this deployment? And then they leave it up to the service member to be like, yeah, I want to go or I don't want to go. But now that everything's become like routine and everything's established, it's like that fear of the unknown isn't as scary as it was when we first went into Afghanistan and Iraq. Everything's a routine, the whole 12-month roll up to that particular deployment, whatever. You know, everything's like more family friendly. And then you're, instead of doing like 14 to 16 months for a rotation, it's literally just 12 months in country overseas. And all that training is extended drills and an extra annual training. And it's less stress on the soldier and their families.
Awesome. That's great. So you, when you say that New York's overstrength, from what I've heard is the majority of recruiting is like faltering, right? There, a lot of recruiting out there isn't hitting mission. Is that all like media hearsay or is that accurate?
No, you're absolutely right. New York is the exception, not the rule.
Okay.
New York has a... So my company, Alpha Company, here in New York, we've made mission or exceeded mission for the last 5 years in a row. Our state just made its mission or extended its National Guard Bureau's mission for the past 4 years, 3 to 4 years.
Okay.
And
but last you are year, the exception. Out of all 50...
Exactly. So last year, we were the only state in all 54 states and territories to make its own state mission.
Okay.
The only one. There were some close people in some other states, but New York was the only one to make its end strength goals at the end of the fiscal year. And in because of our high success, regular Army, the reserve is tied to them, obviously. So like regular Army, other branches of services to like the Air Guard, the Air Force, they're coming to our state to talk to our senior leadership and key people that are highly successful within our company to share with them what we're doing right or what seems to be working for us. And then they could take that home and emulate that, tweak it a little bit, tailor it to their needs. But yeah, our state in particular, we've set the bar pretty high.
Outstanding. Outstanding. So why do you think, like, I know the naysayers will say people don't want to join anymore, but I don't know if that's true. Why do you think it is that other states are falling short when it comes to recruitment?
Between you and me, I think it's the leadership. Leadership drive the train on the morale and the mindset of your individual recruiter. And I feel like based on my almost 20 years of experience, because I've had good leadership and not so good leadership. And the ones that were not so good were very high pressure. You got to recruit, and they beat you up. They punish you. They counsel you. And that's not going to foster an environment where we want to grow. Now it's just based on fear. And yes, fear does work to a degree. But if you want a recruiter to go above and beyond of their expectations, if you treat them with dignity and respect, you get them the tools that they need, fight for them to, you know, per regulation and policy, fight for everything that we can so that you can help your recruiter make their mission. Like, even as a recruiter, like everyone that works in battalion, whether it's a waiver department, any department, I don't work for you. You work for me, because without us, you wouldn't be here and our mission would never get met. We're the most valuable player in the game of recruiting. So if leadership would shift or change their mindset and taking care of the recruiters and find unique ways to motivate them, because what one thing may motivate some recruiters don't motivate others. And I think that this is kind of like a double-edged sword when I say this, but there's a phrase out there, hire slow, fire fast. I think sometimes just to check the box that they have somebody hired, they don't properly vet them or whatever. And it's kind of hard to judge people that are coming in to become recruiters, because you think that they're going to be good and they're not so good. And then it also boils down to, again, the leadership and coaching and mentoring them and showing them what right looks like and help them become a successful recruiter and teaching them the basics. And then your stellar recruiters can come in and say, once you establish yourself, this is what works for me. Like for me, social media is my thing. Some people it's high schools, some are colleges, the combination of the two, or being out in your community or the combination thereof. But everyone has this one thing that they're really, really good at, whether it's waivers, schools, social media, so on and so forth. And you work your way towards that. So in the beginning, if you are becoming a recruiter or in the future, you got to do everything consistently. Do it for 2 or 3 months. Do a self audit. Figure out what's working and what's not working. So tracking your time, the time of day that you're going to, X, Y, Z, and all that stuff. So you can make a well-informed decision in how to adjust your schedule and the tasks that you're doing. And then after 12 months, you could pretty much figure out what are your strengths and weaknesses. So at this point, you double down on your strengths and you continue to work on your weaknesses. And never be afraid to ask somebody questions to help you get somebody in if they're otherwise eligible. And there are some states and recruiters out there that they allow their personal feelings to dictate who they're going to entertain to join, regardless by regulation, if they qualify, based on their value system. And they shouldn't do that. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Or they're ignorant, like they don't understand the green card situation or citizenship in general. So every time they get someone with a green card, they're like lost in the sauce. Or let's say they lost their green card, but they don't know the tricks of the trade to get what they need, which is a different story for another day. But, you know, to get to the Department of Homeland Security to verify that they are, in fact, a permanent resident, and you could still have them join, not even with their green card. And it's and they get their citizenship on top of that as well. So it's crazy, but it's learning everything and anything about your branch of service. And you become a problem solver for your soldier. And what makes the Army National Guard, in my opinion, and what should be the same in a reserve, but I don't see it that much, is the advantage that the Guard has is most of the time we're here for more than 6 or 10 years as a recruiter. So we're fully vested. We're here for the long haul. That's why we say you live here, work here. And if we do right by our applicants, and we have that service after the sale mentality and work ethic by always being there, following up with them. Hey, how was drill? This, that, whatever. You're built, continuing to build that rapport and building that trust and relationship. So in the, they might not have anybody today, but as long as you're not like pressuring them for referrals, eventually when Johnny Snotnose from down the block sees them in uniform, like I want a piece of that pie. You're mm-hmm. not just going to send them to the local recruiting station. My recruiter hooked me up. You got to give him a call. Awesome. You know what I mean? And that's what makes us more successful, I think, than other branches of services. Like active duty, they literally do it for 3 years and they're out. And most of them are voluntold. So they don't even want to be there in the first place. And it literally takes a year to 18 months to learn the job and get effective. By the end of the second year, especially on active duty, because of the high pressure and the toxic environment in a lot of the cases, is they're burnt out after the second year. So now they're just riding the train out until the end of the third year. And they know they're going back to the line unit from that point forward. But yeah, that's pretty much a long-winded response to your question.
No, it's great. It's great. I think like the part that sticks out to me is when you're talking about like toxic leadership traits and that sort of thing, it is, we've all had a toxic boss, you know, like you're just going to do bad work. There's no way to be that effective under a bad boss. If you have a great boss, you will move heaven and earth because you know that they do the same for you. And that's, you would think, right? As military, that we all have this brotherhood and we're all looking out for each other all the time, 100%. We're part of the 1%. We chose to serve. We signed the line. You know, we're putting our country first, all that jazz. But there's still a lot of toxicity out there. You know, I think you're exactly right. And I've seen it in my own different units. You know, if you have a bad commanding officer, you have soldiers that don't want to re-up. You have, like, it just spreads so fast, so quickly. And I think it's great that at the end of the day, it's really just about looking out for people. And that seems to be where the focus is within New York. So you guys are doing something right. It's great.
Another thing to caveat on this, another main reason why New York is so successful is we brought back our battalion career counselors. So even though we're recruiters and our primary mission is recruiting, we, as recruiters, we could care less about retention. That's on the unit. And the units most of the time, like 99% of the time, do that. But we rehired or brought in BCCs, battalion career counselors.
Okay.
So I help look for the good people that want to join, and the BCCs help keep the good soldiers stay in. What happened was we could not out-recruit our losses. Mm-hmm. So our state determined, hey, listen, you guys keep, like, if you guys keep doing as good as you are as a recruiter, if we figure out a way to stuff the hole with something
plug the leak.
To, you know,
yeah,
plug the leak, so to speak, because you're not going to save everybody.
Right.
But we help close the doors where it was almost closed completely. And we're literally re-enlisting a whole, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's insane. The results, obviously, because I mean, New York speaks for itself, but if you close the back door, you focus on retention. And to be honest with you, retention isn't on recruiting. Like, yeah, we could help process them through the BCCs, but retention is through the morale at the units, because I hear almost more times than not, soldiers are not leaving the guard because of the job. They're leaving because of the leadership or lack of training or lack of actual doing Army stuff and just not so great leadership. Yeah. And they join to be a soldier and they want to be a part of something greater than themselves. And, you know, if units could figure out a way to foster the camaraderie and the teamwork, and again, looking to care for the soldier rather than check the box. All right, cool. I asked you how you're doing today. Great job. And then you treat them like crap afterwards. But yeah, so that's just my two cents on that topic.
No, it's huge. It's huge. You see it all the time. You know, people who are just checking the box, and sometimes it devolves into that. I know, you know, a lot of O3s out there are very excited for their command time. They want to make that difference. They want to be a positive role model. They loved being a platoon leader, and then they just get swamped, right? They get bombarded with all this paperwork and your CMDP, you know, your maintenance program, is that up to snuff, and this, that, and the other thing. And they just forget, you know, about the soldier. There's no time to focus on that because the unit's burning, right? We have all of these vehicles that are non-mission capable, and are they really PMCSing properly? And it's just, it gets to be a lot. But I think the message should be clear, you know, take care of your people and they'll take care of you. So it's great.
100%.
Awesome. 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 So I got a couple more questions and we'll wrap up. So my second to last one, what's next for you? What's your master plan for your career? Since you helped so many people get started with theirs, where are you headed?
I think where I'm at now is I still enjoy being a recruiter and I like recruiting. I'm just tired of the game with the leadership because it's sales. So you're always got that pressure. So like, unlike a deployment where you deploy and you're under a lot of stress, and when the deployment's over, it's like, I can, you know, get the it relief off my shoulders, and there's relief. In recruiting, it's like a Ferris wheel. It's just, it never stops. And good thing, not so good thing is, you know, leadership is always looking for more. Like, hey, I know you exceeded mission by two or three, but you know, could you give us a little bit more? it's like, can I relax a little? Can I take a knee for a second? But you know, that's, you know, that comes with the territory, and it could wear on you if you don't work on your resilience. Thank God the Army has resiliency training. But for me, my passion is less for the in-person recruiting, like on a personal one-on-one. I'm more interested in helping the masses, because there is a lot of misinformation or disinformation out there and a lot of negativity around serving. And I just love helping people at a national level. And I'm just simply pro Army on my page, even though I am a full-time National Guard recruiter. I've never created my channel or my social media specifically for recruiting for the New York Army National Guard. It's always been a personal page. And me just adding value to help people go from street to boots. And where I'm headed now is I have a few things in the works, but I'm definitely planning on being a full-time content creator on YouTube and working that in some way. I'm also looking at some potential contracting options right now with NGB and the various companies that are already currently working with them, or even starting my own by, you know, dropping a bid on something.
Heck,
but
yeah.
I'm definitely going to be creating content and continuing to do that. And if all goes well, my wife will become a recruiter, which will give my channel longevity, keeping up with the accurate and most up-to-date information. And she'll become like a secondary face in the channel. It won't just be me. She'll be like that subject matter expert, and that will boost her numbers.
Nice.
And but yeah, that's where I'm headed pretty much right now. And if everything goes well, I have to decide, do I want to retire in May of next year or at the end of the fiscal year? My contract currently goes until 2026, but like I said, I feel like I'm almost burnt out as an in-person recruiter. Like, I feel like I've gotten to the pinnacle. I don't know where else to go. I'm kind of bored, but where I thoroughly enjoy is being here on YouTube and helping out the masses.
Awesome. Well, I mean, you're so good at it. So it helps. It helps when you're good at it.
I'm all right. I'm just your average recruiter doing exceptional things in certain areas like YouTube.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Awesome. Well, I love it. So last question, for anyone interested in learning more, it sounds like whether it's the Guard or Army, what next steps would you recommend for anybody trying to join the service?
I suggest that you literally like do your research, right? Everything is at your fingerprints. Everything's at your fingertips. Google, mm-hmm. YouTube. There's no reason for you to rush through the process, get in, then find out about something. Like I cannot tell you how many times somebody goes to the active duty Army or Reserve looking for the National Guard and the recruiter, sways them away from it or makes them feel a type of way and downplays the Guard. Then they get in active duty and they're like, oh my God, I could have been part-time. I could have been focusing at college. I could have got state tuition assistance, whether that's Guard or Reserve. And a lot of times, like, you know, obviously active duty, they really, really push for active duty. Then they offer Reserve if you don't want to go active, but their primary push is active duty. And a lot of times they only want Reserve or mm-hmm. Reserve status, whether that's Guard or Reserve. And they don't sometimes know about the Guard, but they get pushed active duty. And then I get those direct messages or DMs on Instagram. Hey, I'm on active duty. I'm in AIT or I just graduated. I'm not liking this. Can I transfer to the Guard or Reserve? And how do I do it? And I give them the bad misfortunate news. I'm like, sorry, man, you're going to have to complete your contract and then transfer over. You can upgrade from part-time, whether Guard or Reserve, to full-time regular Army, but you can't downgrade from regular Army and go part-time, and there's no such thing as a 2-week notice. So you have to do your research. Start with the official pages, goarmy.com for regular Army, which is full-time, and the Army Reserve part-time, or the nationalguard.com for National Guard. Write down your questions, anything you could think of. Check out the entire website, thoroughly research it. Talk to people that previously served or currently serving or influencers, not that I consider myself an influencer, but people think I am. I just provide information, but
okay, a little
take
bit
that
influence.
With a grain of salt, a little bit. I don't think it's influence. It's more or less me helping them feel more confident in their decision in serving, because there's a lot of unknowns or questions that they don't feel like either A, they don't know the answer, I can't find the answer, or they feel like the recruiter they're dealing with is not being honest and forthright with them and just looking for the sale. Mm-hmm. I'm that bridge to say, hey, listen, this is the real deal. These are the facts. You do with that information as you wish, but that's it. And I get those types of messages all the time. Hey, thank you for everything that you do. And it's funny because sometimes I'll actually have people on the day they enlist when they post their enlistment photo, and instead of thanking their recruiter, they're thanking me.
I bet they love it. I bet the recruiters love that.
Oh yeah. But yeah, research is king or queen. You got to do your research, and you can't say I didn't know or whatever, in my opinion. But and don't be afraid to ask all the questions, and don't be pressured into something. If it's not for you, it's not for you. And if you're ready, great. And if you're not, that's fine too. Like, you don't have to join. And you have all the way up to the point where you swear in and sign your actual contract to say, this ain't for me. But yeah.
Yeah, no, 100%. I see my students all the time. They're afraid to talk to their recruiters. And it's like, look, the operative word here is recruit, right? You wouldn't be afraid to talk to a baker about baking. You know, like, this is, it's your contract. You need to talk to them. They're going to set you up. A good recruiter can completely change your life. Absolutely.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of recruiters out there that are egotistical. Like, all right, long story short, I just contracted this guy from New Jersey, a neighboring state. So you're familiar with Cat 4, right? 16 and above, as long as you have a line score, you can still join. It's mm-hmm. like winning the lottery. It doesn't happen often. Anyway, I ended up putting him in as a Cat 4 recently. And he unfortunately told me about his story, how because of his scores and everything and wanting to be infantry, the active duty recruiters were making fun of him. Literally making fun of him. I had him send the photo with me creating the graphics of him being an infantryman in the New York Army National Guard. I was like, send that to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, like had he listened to them, he would have never even posted the comment on the ASVAB support page. I would have never put whatever information I put underneath his comment, and he ended up reaching out to me, and he would have never been serving in the Guard. He would have just given up and never did it. We have a responsibility as a recruiter to give you all the information to make a well-informed decision and to help you get in. Like, you're qualified or unqualified. And then the recruiter will obviously work the qualified first. The unqualified who may qualify for a waiver will work as we can. But just because they might not make, like, he had tested four times. Like, there was no hope for him. There's either cat four or nothing.
Right.
It just so happened that he came up to me like with a poo-poo platter. He already took the medical. He took the test four times. And he had a need. I had a solution. He made it happen. And now he's like this kid's energy of being so grateful and thankful. Like, he's, I can't express how strongly that he was and emotional about it. But even his mom gave me a hug and everything.
Right. And he's going to be a kick ass soldier. He's going to be a kick ass soldier. 100%. For sure.
100%. Now,
I can't believe how people forget sometimes. You know, I know when I was 18. Like, if somebody made me feel bad about something, I was never doing that something again. You know, there's so much ego at that age that you, because you think you know it all. You know, you think, well, I'm fairly popular at my high school. I'll be fine. But the world is huge, you know, and a few recruiters making fun of you is nothing compared to what's ahead of you after that. So it's great. It's great. You're part of that kid's success story. So that's amazing. And that mom's
success story. I feel like he's
going
to do amazing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. She's very happy. She's very supportive of him and everything.
It's huge.
Like,
awesome.
He's one of those recruits that's refreshing and makes what we go through as recruiters worth it. Like, he's one of those people that I appreciate putting in boots. Right. I'm not just that bridge for them to go from civilian to soldier. It's amazing.
Right.
It's a good feeling.
Well, and you know, each year, because of this trajectory you put him on, each year, the gap between who he is and who he used to be is going to just explode, right? Like, it's exponential growth from here on out because he appreciates every opportunity he gets and he knows how close he was to it not getting it. People are completely different when they work for what they get. They're completely different with what they get. So
you get what you put into it, period.
All times. Awesome. All right, cool. Well, last thing, if anybody wants to get in contact with you, where can they find you?
On YouTube and Instagram at Team Swartz.
Awesome. All right, Sergeant First Class Swartz of the New York National Guard, thank you so much for being on the show today. It was a pleasure having you.
I appreciate you. Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
Awesome. All right.
Remember to be kind to yourself and treat yourself as a learner. Are you considering a career in the military but feeling overwhelmed by the ASVAB exam? Look no further than GammonAllTutors.com for the best ASVAB prep courses. Our courses are designed by experienced instructors to help you master the best sections of the ASVAB exam, including mathematics, English, and general science. We use proven teaching methods and provide extensive practice materials to ensure that you are fully prepared on test day. With GammonAllTutors.com, you'll have access to comprehensive study guides, personalized tutoring sessions, and online practice exams. Our courses are available on demand, so you can learn at your own pace and on your own schedule. Don't let the ASVAB exam hold you back from achieving your career goals. Sign up for GammonAllTutors.com ASVAB prep courses today and take the first step towards a successful military career.